This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
The Escape Pod on Joy and via podcast at joy.org.au/escapepod.
Oh, and it's a big good afternoon. Thank you, Pete Dillon and Gravings. That was a wonderful show. You're listening to The Escape Pod on Joy 94.9. And this week, it's Russ flying solo. Yes, my two musketeers are away. So, Jo is down in Tassie, and she's having a wonderful time visiting friends down in Tassie. And my other musketeer, Mark, is at home studying. He's very serious about this studying, and he's right into it at the moment. So, you've got me today. Hey, Russ, Joy 94.9. I'm a travel agent. I have been a travel agent for some 30 years now. So if anyone has any travel-related questions that you'd like me to answer on air today, please feel free to email me on onair@joy.org.au. So that's email onair@joy.org.au, and I will answer any special travel questions you've got. So this week in travel, folks, has been quite exciting. Up over the next few weeks, we see some more Pride festivals coming up. And who doesn't like a bit of Pride? I love it. So if you're looking for a festival on your radar, may I suggest that you look at Calgary in Canada. Yeehaw, where all the cowboys are. And if you're looking for something extra special, why not head to the City of Sin? Yes, Las Vegas. It all happens in Las Vegas. You might even want to have a bit of a Elvis wedding in Sin City. So the next couple of Pride festivals are Calgary in Canada and Vegas in the United States. What else has been happening? I've recently been watching videos from the gay Mediterranean cruise, which ended this week in Roma, and they absolutely look hysterical. I had friends on that cruise, and the pool party was absolutely amazing. They had a Vanessa Williams pool party, and to see all of these guys and girls dressed in their gorgeous cozzies, and they were being water cannoned by all these water bombs, and it looked like they absolutely had a fabulous time. So highly recommend those cruises. They're a lot of fun. What else has been happening this week in travel? Well, we've had a tram strike in Melbourne. Clang, clang, clang goes the trolley. Ding, ding, ding goes the bell. I really hope the tram drivers get the award wages that they're after, and I hope it hasn't inconvenienced anybody. We've also got the exciting fight between Uber and the taxi service, the new Uber car service and taxis. So I'll leave it up to you to decide which you prefer. One, obviously, is overpriced, has dirty, smelly interiors, and, you know, needs to be challenged a bit, needs a bit of competition. On the other hand, you've got the new competition who has this awesome, awesome brand new cars. They're on time and their fares are kind of reasonable. Yeah, so Uber versus taxi, which will it be? I don't know. The other sad news this week was obviously we've still got more refugees, immigrant border issues, and it's absolutely terrible. I couldn't believe when I woke up yesterday and heard the news about those poor people. 71 people had suffocated in the back of a van in Austria, which is terribly, terribly sad. I know the Austrian and the Hungarian governments are currently arresting people for people trafficking. And then there was that other sad news about people who are in Libya, and there were 500 of them, and their boats capsized, and the Libyan government could only find 180 of them. So I really hope that they open up the borders in Europe and let these people in. There's been 300,000 refugees and immigrants this year alone that have been trying to get to Europe. So it'd be awesome if the governments can all have a coordinated action towards this. And you just have to wonder how many of those people are members of the GLBTQI community. There must be some of them in there, and we wish them well and safe passage to the new world. And I hope they find something awesome in Europe somewhere along the way. So today we have a special guest. It is Steve Winter. Now, Steve is outrageous. He's a photographer from National Geographic. We love Steve. And Steve, photographs endangered species. In particular, tiger, rhino. What else does he photograph? Jaguar and bear. And he's just a lovely, lovely man. And he's got this fantastic reputation for being absolutely wonderful and getting these up close and personal photos. So I absolutely cannot wait to see his pictures on his website. And now I can't wait to listen to the interview. So please join me as Mark and I interview Mr. Steve Winter. He's fantastic.
Day here in the Escape Pod. You're here with Russ and Mark. Today's guest is Steve Winter. Steve Winter is a phenomenal character who we're going to hear a lot about, and he's currently prowling around the Sri Lankan jungles looking for leopards. Is that right, Steve?
It sure is. I'm here in Yala National Park on the southeastern corner of Sri Lanka, and we've been working with leopards for about the last 10 days.
Is that near Gaul? Is that around that area?
It's further up from there. You kind of go around the curve and keep going north. And it's great. I haven't been here since I was a very young person, so it was great coming back. And it's great to be able to work with leopards and the local people here that work in the park and try to find pictures and video that people haven't seen before of this amazing cat.
Now, Steve, just a question. The leopard that you're trying to find, are they in one of your endangered species, or is Sri Lanka lucky enough to have enough jungle where this particular cat is not endangered?
Well, I'm not actually, that's a good question. I'm not actually sure about the classification of the leopard here in Sri Lanka. They seem to be doing really well. The leopard is probably the most persecuted cat on the planet because it's found everywhere from southern South Africa by the Cape all the way to Siberia. But here they have, I don't know, there's different figures, 12 to 20% of the land protected. And they don't have a whole lot of leopard human conflict. So I think they're doing really well. This is kind of like, well, it's an island paradise for humans. It's an island paradise for leopards also.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. And so you're getting up close and personal, which I would imagine must be really exhilarating for a photographer. Have you seen many of the leopard yet?
Well, yeah, we've seen quite a few, and sometimes they're not so up close and personal like other cats that I work with, because a leopard is somewhat shy animal. That's one of the reasons why they're adaptable to living everywhere from, like, right in the center of Mumbai, which we covered also, and have extraordinary video and images that will appear in the December National Geographic, and then the NG Wild piece will be later on, but in 2016. But, you know, you see them at a distance, and they may walk right next to your Jeep that you could almost reach out and touch them.
Steve, interesting that you've mentioned those two magical words, National Geographic. We know that you're in Sri Lanka. We know that you're hunting for a photography point of view, some of the most beautiful big cats in the world. Let's take a step back. Who is Steve Winter, and what is your relationship with National Geographic? Because you've got a fantastic story to tell.
Well, since I was a small kid growing up in the center of the United States in Indiana, actually, when I was 8 years old, it was one of my goals. I mean, how do you have goals? You have dreams when you're a kid, you know. I want to be a photographer for National Geographic. And I'm lucky enough to be able to have realized that dream. I did not think about photographing animals when I was a young person, though. I more looked at the exotic people and cultures. And as a kid, you daydream. You look at pictures, you read stories, and you daydream about going places. And that's what I did. But I, you know, said, I'm going to be a National Geographic photographer. But how many people say that, you know? I'm just lucky enough to be able to realize my dream and also change my life kind of by accident, going from being a photojournalist to working with animals now.
I think you're being very modest. Your talent is world-class. You're one of the most highly recognized wildlife and nature photographers on the planet. You work with one of the most established institutions globally, National Geographic, which probably has the highest pedigree of any publication when it comes to photographing nature.
We do, yes.
You're not lucky. You're very talented. And this is the story we want to tell. As much as what you're photographing is fascinating, but you're fascinated. You go around the world and you follow your passion. You weren't just lucky as a kid. You must have started somewhere with a tiny camera and, you know, a glint in your eye. Take us right back to, instead of just being modest, let's hear your story, because you're fascinating.
Well, what I did was I was lucky enough to have a dad who was interested in photography. He was an amateur photographer, but we had photo books laying around that were of the world's best photographers. They had absolutely nothing to do with animals, though. They were the best photojournalists of their time. And so I grew up looking at the decisive moment of Cartier-Bresson, Robert Capa, or Eugene Smith, all these great photojournalists in black and white, and that's what I, you know, looked at, and that's who I aspired to be. But as a kid, you always have dreams, you know. You want to be a fireman, you want to be president, you want to do this, you want to do that. I worked with my father taking photographs. One of the great things we did is Kodak years ago had a summer snapshot contest. And as a kid, my father would win first place in our local newspaper. And then later on, as I got better, I won first and he won second. So we started this competition. You know, it was great, but I learned the basics of any visual art form, which is composition and learning to have a visual identity of my own, my look.
What is your look?
Even though, like, I didn't take a picture of an animal until I was 34 years old. So I've switched gears totally and taken that storytelling photojournalism part and applying it to animals and then, you know, using other things.
And so does that mean that prior to being 34, you were taking photographs of people and cultures that you admire and that you love?
Right. I was working for magazines in the United States like Time, Newsweek. I was like a staffer at Business Week and Fortune and the German magazine Stern. I worked for them a long time, Geo. And it was an accidental event that you could always say is meant to be, that I got a public relations shoot for Merck Pharmaceuticals in the jungle. They were trying to find new drugs in the rainforest. And I brought my family with me. My wife's a journalist. And it totally changed our lives. And I worked with dedicated and passionate scientists that I wanted to work with. Instead of photographing President Clinton and getting, you know, pushed in the solar plexus by the Secret Service, I was walking in the jungle.
Surely the White House and the jungle have
about it. I have no background. Amazing.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime. joy.org.au.
There must be some parallels, though, between the White House Press Corps and the Wilders of the Jungle, Steve.
No, it was pretty. It's looking back on it, so you figure it was meant to be. But I work with big cats now, and only by accident. Now that is how my presentation starts. My nine lives is how did I actually get involved in this? Not so much my history, but when was the first time I actually had a encounter with a big cat, which was a jaguar.
And so what was your first impression when you were confronted by this cat?
Well, I was scared to death. I mean, I have no background in this at all. I mean, imagine going in the jungle. It's like, well, yeah, this is really cool. I remember the first time my wife and I stepped in the rainforest on a trail in the world's largest jungle research station in Costa Rica. we went about 4 or 5 meters till it got dark, and I turned around and said, why don't we go back to breakfast and meet the scientists we're going to work with and come back with them later? Because none of us have any background in this, and it gets dark, and you hear the birds singing and the insects, and it just is kind of scary. There's snakes around that'll kill you. And
you're trying to have some recall about what you've learned about the wild. You know, don't follow anything and wear a backpack with a bell on it so they know you're coming. But it's not easy that first time in, is it?
No, not at all. And, you know, in the situation where a place we were at, no one walks in the forest without rubber boots. And I mean real rubber boots that'll stop the fangs of a fertilance from going into your thing. So just thinking that. And then we come back after that, and there's a big clay pot outside where we're staying, and our son's 6 years old sleeping in there, and there's a fertilance in the bottom of it. And we're like, whoa, here we have come to a new world, a new and different world that we don't understand yet. And now I'm the big cat guy, and I love it. You know, I want to tell their stories and get people interested in the lives of big cats and how we can save them.
So, Steve, let's talk about those big risks that are facing the big cats in the wild. What are the things that you're trying to highlight, and how do we assist in saving them?
Well, I think that the number one thing with any animal is habitat loss right now. In India, per se, we could put on the tigers that coal, which is what powers the world's largest democracy in India, is found in the forest. Just think of forests for a minute, like the Amazon or the forests of India, since we're there. Forests are the lungs of the world. They provide 50% of the oxygen that we breathe. They pull carbon from the atmosphere, slowing climate change. Where's the drinking water we drink come from? 75% of fresh water comes from forests. They act like sponges. Any you know, root, you know, kind of plant. Now, I'm not a botanist at all, but if we save the lands that these big cats live in, we can help save ourselves. So I want to tell their story. Poaching is another aspect. A lot of people know what's happening to elephants and rhinos and tigers for the usage for traditional medicines or as ivory. We need to stop that demand. You cannot ring every national park in the world with police. So we need to stop the demand for these items. Like rhino horns made out of the same thing as our hair or fingernails. So you might as well just chew your fingernails and save a rhino, you know. Tiger bone, worthless. You know, you want to eat a bone? Yeah, there's marrow. It's probably good for you. But you gnaw on a cow bone then, you know, and save the tiger. This doesn't have any magical properties. So
no.
We have many things that we can work with. National Geographic has the Big Cat Initiative with many projects that we fund and different initiatives to help save big cats.
So let's talk a bit more about National Geographic and your relationship with such a fine publication. Are you, you've been involved for how long?
24 years.
24 years. But you're so young.
No, I'm not. I'm young at heart. I'm very young at heart, and I'm still out here in the jungle doing all this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I look at myself as very young. Thank you.
So how did you get associated with National Geographic? Did they reach out to you, or did you chase them?
Well, it was actually kind of both. Well, I was working on my portfolio and working for Newsweek and working for Business Week. I was doing other things where I would take time out and go places to work on my portfolio. And I worked a lot for UNICEF. And I was just getting ready to go in and work my way up the ladder at National Geographic. And they actually came to me and said, we've seen your photographs, and we love how you photographed kids. Would you like to help us in our redesign of National Geographic World, which was kids' magazine then? And, you know, while I was doing that, I was at one of the best photojournalism agencies in New York, Blackstar. And so I was doing a bunch of different things and slowly moved into wildlife and applied that to kids. And actually worked with kids in other countries in these stories and got a lot of feedback from teachers that the kids enjoyed seeing someone their age in these wildlife stories, because these scientists have a son or daughter, a brother and sister that is 10 to 14 years old. And so that all worked out, and I was working on stories as a photojournalist for top magazines in the world, and I started doing different things at National Geographic, and all of a sudden they said, well, we need natural history photographers. And I proposed my first animal story, and I was visited by a jaguar one night, and that began my relationship with big cats. I always say that I didn't choose big cats. Big cats chose me, because I don't know anything about them. I was lucky to pass biology in high school. You know, I don't have a background in this at all. But I rely on scientists and local people.
You've found big cats all over the place. It's not just in exotic countries, in Asia, in Africa. You've also found them in the Hollywood Hills.
Well, to me, this is my goal. What we need to do is connect us to the animals that we love, that we think are halfway around the world. We live, in many instances, with predators right in our midst. But they don't want to be seen. And unless we have a problem with them, which is usually an accident, like someone taking a walk or riding their mountain bike or, you know, walking their dog in a park and they come, you know, in front of a cat, a coyote, a mountain lion or something, you're not going to have any problems with them and you won't even know they're there. So getting that image of the mountain lion in the Hollywood Hills, or the Hollywood cougar, as they call it,
I thought that was Joan Collins.
Vitally important to me. Yeah. Well, she's one of them, too. I got so many jokes about this. What are you doing in Hollywood? I said, trying to photograph a cougar. They said, well, that should be pretty easy. I said, no, the animal kind.
Here are some benefits you could gain by becoming a Joy 94.9 sponsor. Increase awareness of your product. Increase your customer base. Increase your profits so you can afford that new item you've had your eye on. You know the one I mean. Gregory sponsors Joy, and now his business is just peachy. Isn't that so, Gregory?
Yes, well, I've...
Ha-ha! Wonderful! Dial today, 1-300-JOY-949, or send your mail electronically. sales@joy.org.au. That's A-U as in A-U. Sponsor Joy!
You're on Joy 94.9. We have the amazing Steve Winter, who has been working with National Geographic for many a year, and his association and his work with the big cats around the world is helping tell the story about how they are losing their habitat and facing several challenges in their lifestyle. But, Steve, the big thing is you're coming to Australia to tell us all these stories live, aren't you?
Right, and I'm very, very excited about it. We'll be in Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth. So I've never been to Australia. My family's coming with me, so we're ready. And I love getting in front of an audience that loves National Geographic and telling them my story and the story of Big Cat.
That's fantastic, Steve. And I guess they are going to get to hear some of your stories. Have you got a special one for our listeners at Joy where you've had a close encounter or a scrape with a cat or a bear or something that that ever made you question your job?
Well, I've had many of those, but they happened so quickly. You know, it's like you can't breathe. You feel like your heart's in your throat. And the camera's shaking so bad, you figure all the pictures are going to be blurry. But I work with people I trust that are comfortable around these animals, so that's good. But the first one was one night I was in bed where I was in a bunk bed in a one-room shack atop a mountain in Guatemala on my first wildlife story. And I hear the stairs creaking. And then the floorboards creak, and then scratching under the door, and then sniffing like, and all the hair on the back of my head stood up, and it's like, I thought people were coming here, and I'm in the middle of nowhere. And I grabbed the walkie-talkie and called down the mountain to the naturalist I was working with, and he said, Steve, don't worry. He said this in Spanish. Don't worry, it's just a black jaguar. But when you don't know anything about it, and a cat comes to your door... you know, I was scared to death, but and so, that's the night.
That, is a black jaguar
the first
deadly?
Encounter I had.
Is it a deadly animal? Is it a deadly animal? Will they attack?
Well, you know, we all look at these predators as being deadly, but when you really look at the incidence of conflict, they're very rare, especially with jaguars. But this thing's a huge animal.
And fast.
And the funny thing is, why was he coming to my door? He's curious. It's like, who is this guy? Maybe he didn't think I bathed often enough, and he wanted to know. He smelled me in the jungle and followed me back to this one-room shack. He was just coming to say hi, probably, but he scared me to death.
So big cats, how related are they to the domestic cat? Do they like to sit in a big box in the middle of it? Do they do all those cat-like things?
100%. And that,
really?
That's why I was talking about connections using Hollywood cougar. You know, our domestic house cat came from the African wild cat. And if when you see one, though, they're being rapidly diminished because they eat chickens and things like that and farmers around Africa. They came from, that they're a wild cat and they were domesticated. You see them in hieroglyphs in Egyptian tombs and things like that. Cleopatra had African wild cats as pets. And when you see them in the wild, I swear they act exactly like our house cats. You see a tiger scratching on a tree? That's his scratching post. He just happens to be 8 foot long, so he's a little bit bigger than the cats we're used to, you know, are 10 foot long. So, but they do the same things. They play, they eat, they mate, they have young. They do the same things we do. I'd rather compare them to us. Because we're all living beings on this planet, and if we start looking at things differently, we might actually be able to help save big cats and in the process help save ourselves.
That's awesome. Hey, Steve, I have been to Alaska some 10 times and have had the pleasure of seeing grizzlies out in the wild, not up close, mind you. But you've photographed the Siberian grizzly, and whereabouts
right.
did you do that, and what was that experience like?
Well, I went to Kamchatka to photograph the giant bears that are related to the Kodiak bear, which is the largest bear in the world. And there are certain times a year when the salmon are running that the bears are totally laser-focused on just eating salmon.
Right.
And putting fat on for hibernating in the winter. And but you're so close to these animals, and they may be laser-focused on the salmon, until they look, smell, or come into contact with you in a way that they may feel uncomfortable, and then they let you know. I was charged by a female that, you know, was like 12 foot, and luckily when she saw me, she turned off to the left. And you have people there, you know, park guards with shotguns and stuff like that, but we didn't ever have any reason to use them. We shot one with a rubber bullet that kept coming to my door, and for some reason the door never locked or shut properly. So I put a ski pole underneath the handle. A lot of good that would have done with a bear that weighs 1,500 pounds or something. But it was a great circumstance. But you do come into situations that will make your heart stop for a second. You can't breathe. And luckily, for me, I come into very close contact with tigers and snow leopards and mountain lions and lions and all that, but I'm still here. The animal that causes me the most problems are microscopic.
Right.
Interesting. Like mosquitoes are the number one killer.
What's your favorite?
You know, I've had malaria, dengue, and all that. So.
What's your favorite creature out in the wild that you've photographed?
Well, you know, I'm not real big on favorites because I love everything, but I have to admit that all the time I've spent with tigers, that I have an emotional connection to them because of the length of time I've spent working with them. And the tiger book that I did with National Geographic, Tigers Forever, was written by my wife, and so it was a family affair, and just the length of time working with this animal in many different locations, from Myanmar to Sumatra, Thailand, and in many locations in India, that has to be my favorite.
So what next? What is the big thing for you coming up? What haven't you done yet?
Well, there's a couple things that I'm actually going to revisit. When I did the first jaguar story for National Geographic, but only ended up with a couple of images of the animals, though, the other images were telling the story of the jaguar and the problems that they have, we're living on ranches and things like that. So that's actually my next story again, and things have changed. I was the first person to go to the Brazilian Pantanal, where you can actually see jaguars. And now there's jaguar tourism there, where people float in boats looking at the birds. And used to just be sport fishermen in that area. Now people go specifically to see jaguars. And so I'm doing another story on jaguars, and you know, it has changed dramatically because there's a lot of research being done on the animals, and a lot more locations where I'll actually be able to photograph them. And the Siberian tiger and the Amur leopard up in Siberia, that's always been anything that's extremely hard to do, I like doing. You know, it's a great challenge. So we're going to be doing those also. I didn't include the Siberian tiger in my tiger story because many of the population had gotten canine distemper, because tigers go into these small villages in the dead of winter to hunt dogs, and 60% of the population was wiped out. So now they bounce back like all big cats do, so I'm going to head back there too.
So that's an interesting point you bring up. Are the big cats good breeders?
Very good. I mean, if you give them strong protection, enforcement, and strong laws, enforcement of those laws, careful monitoring, so you get a baseline of how many animals, let's use tigers as an example. You take an area and you get a baseline, this is how many animals we have here, and by primarily using camera traps or scat studies with genetics, you get a baseline how many, and you do this every couple of years. You know whether your population is rising or falling, whether you have poaching issues, and the land is protected. You know you're not losing it to encroachers or mining or stuff like that. If it is a protected area,
so they're not pandas. They do breed. Protect.
Oh, they're real good at it. They're real good at it.
Steve,
you give protection, boom, they'll bounce back. If you have two tigers, you protect that male and female, then you'll have four, five, six, and it'll just keep doubling. As long as you protect them and they stay healthy.
Steve, how do our listeners help? What do they join an association, or do they contact National Geographic? How would they go about assisting you in your work?
Well, I always say that, my work with National Geographic, we have a big cat initiative. We work with the best scientists in the world, and we have programs there. So go on causeanduproar.org, hashtag Big Cats Forever, and check out, and just type in Big Cats in the National Geographic website. We're the number one animal website in the world. We are the number one brand on Instagram and Facebook, which is amazing. That brings in young people. We're below Justin Bieber, Kardashians, Jay-Z, Beyonce. But we're above Nike. I mean, that gives you hope for the world. We got 4 million followers on Instagram.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you don't need to do those acts that the Kardashians do to break the internet. We don't need to see you half naked, Steve, as long as the cats are.
Exactly. And it's like, this gives you hope. It's like, we have that many people, and every month we, like, jump by a million or more. So it's like, people around the world are interested in the photography of National Geographic. One reason, I think, is we all carry cameras with phones in them.
Good point.
People would call them phones with cameras, but we're more visually literate. So it's great that everybody has the opportunity to be a photographer.
Steve, can we still get tickets to your Australian shows?
I'm here in the wilds of Sri Lanka, so I would check it out and find out, because, to tell you the truth, I don't know.
And for those listeners who are listening now, you do so at www.nglive.org/Pacific and grab some tickets to Steve's Australian shows.
Just to recap those dates, Melbourne, Steve will be on Friday the 31st of July at Hamer Hall at the Arts Centre in Melbourne. If you're in Perth or Sydney, Steve will be on Monday the 10th of August in Perth at Heath Ledger Theatre at the State Theatre of Western Australia. Or if you're in Sydney, Steve is there on Sunday the 16th of August at the Concert Hall at Sydney Opera House. You can get your tickets at www.nglive.org/Pacific.
And there is our interview with Steve Winter. What an amazing man. He travels the world and takes amazing photos for National Geographic with his cameras, and he gets to see this wildlife up close and personal. How lucky is this man? I just would love to see a bear up close. I've seen many bears in Melbourne, but I would love to see a bear up close in the wild. How exciting would that be?
Community radio is all about breaking down stereotypes. Joy 94.9 would love to hear from women who can confidently work with all things engineering and IT. For more info, visit joy.org.au.
So at this point in our show today, it is time for Russ's rant. And I know you've all been waiting for a great big rant from Russ. So this week I want to talk about something that I think is totally wrong.com, and I mean wrong.com. It's airlines. Airlines who overbook. What is that all about? We know they do it. They do it on every single flight. They want every plane out full without a spare seat on board. So what happens to you, the traveller, when you actually get to the airport and there is no seat available for you? Well, two stories from me. Once I was in Hawaii with my brother. We were travelling on American Airlines and they came up and tapped us on the shoulder and they said, our flight's full. What would you like to do? Would you like to stay here for a few more days? And the outcome of our extra time in Hawaii was American Airlines gave us one extra week to hula through the Hawaiian Islands, all paid by their expenses. And we actually then were given $100 a day spending money. So we thanked American Airlines very much. Fortunately, we weren't working at the time, so it was a win-win situation. We got another week in Hawaii courtesy of the airlines. On the other hand, a couple of years ago, I was travelling with Etihad Airlines and I was going trekking in Jordan and I was going to see the ancient ruins in Petra. Man, are they beautiful. If you ever want to see some beautiful ruins, you simply must go to Petra. All the red sand and the beautiful ruins are absolutely gorgeous. On this particular evening, got to Melbourne on time and Etihad said, sorry, there's no seats. You're going to have to come back tomorrow night. So me, being me, I stood my ground and decided that that wasn't on. And I said to them, look, I know what you've done and I know what you're doing and I am due in Jordan in 14 hours to go on this tour. You're going to have to pick somebody else. So the moral of the story is, and they did kindly pick somebody else, the moral of the story is when an airline overbooks, it's a win-win situation for you. So you need to put your hand up and you need to say, well, yeah, I can kind of help you out here, but what am I going to get out of it? And they are supposed to compensate you. So you think about that the next time an airline bumps you off or tells you they're full. You turn around and say, well, I'd like to go business class on the next flight, or who knows? There are many, many options available. Other things that are happening in travel this week, which are very exciting, Qantas, the flying kangaroo, they have a bit of a sale on at the moment for people who like travelling premium economy and business class. How good is that? You could posh up a bit and sit up the front. I mean, who doesn't want that extra room? I'd love to. Premium economy is very nice. What they give you is a bit of extra leg room, some champagne to drink on the flight, and some pretty good movies to watch. So if you're thinking of going to the Americas, and that means LA or San Francisco, their current sale fare return premium economy is only $2,999 and business class is only $5,000 return. So there are some really, really good airfares out there. Well, you're back on the Escape Pod. It's nearly time for us to say goodbye. It's been a fantastic show. I loved listening to Steve Winter. For those of you out in travel land, if you are looking for some great airfares, early bird deals coming up to North America, may I ask you to please
check your local website for your local airline. Cathay Pacific and Malaysian Airlines have already released. So 2016 is going to be a bargain year for travel. I hope my friend Joe is having a fantastic time down in Tassie. And Mark, you better be studying away. I know you're sharpening that pencil. I know you're doing a fantastic job studying away.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.